Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 and H1 FY22 earnings conference call of Vaibhav Global Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kyle Kohler of CDR India. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Vaibhav Global's Q2 and H1 FY22 earnings conference call for the quarter and six months ended September 30th, 2021. Today, we have with us Mr. Sunil Agrawal, Managing Director, Mr. Vineet Ganeriwala, Group CFO, and Mr. Prashant Saraswat, Head Investor Relations. We will begin the call with opening remarks by Mr. Sunil Agrawal on the business operations, key initiatives, and broad outlook, followed by a discussion on the financial performance by Mr. Vineet Ganeriwala, after which the management will open the forum for a Q&A session. Before we get started, I would like to point out that some statements made or discussed on today's call may be forward-looking in nature and must be viewed in conjunction with the risks and uncertainties we face. A detailed statement and explanation of this risk is included in the earnings presentation, which has been shared with you all earlier. The company does not undertake to update these forward-looking statements publicly. I would now like to invite Mr. Sunil Agrawal to make his opening remarks. Over to you, Sunil.
Thank you, Kyle. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for Vaibhav Global's earnings call to discuss Q2 and H1 FY22 financials and operating performance. Before we begin, I hope all of you and your families are keeping safe and healthy. With the vaccine drive gaining pace in most countries, we hope that this will enable us to lead unrestricted and normal lives. COVID-19 has started down that path and will gradually become an endemic. Each of us has had unique learnings from this unprecedented event in our lifetimes. We at Vaibhav Global have used this challenge as an opportunity to learn and to excel. I hope you had a chance to look at our quarterly results and presentation. In Q2, we have seen our revenues at ₹635 crores, an increase of 6% YoY and 30.9% increase over Q2 FY20. With the vaccination in both U.S. and U.K. reaching pivotal levels, severity of threat from COVID has largely reduced. As U.S. and U.K. economies have more or less fully opened, we have seen consumer behavior moving to something we call revenge outings. This means substantially increased brick-and-mortar shopping and people going out for dinners, family gatherings, and holidays. After a massive jump last year, overall e-commerce as a percentage of U.S. and U.K. overall retail sales has dipped in recent months. This phenomenon has led to relatively lower shopping for home shopping retailers like us. Retail revenue for us grew by 3.3% YoY. Our H1 revenue grew 14.6% over H1 FY21 and 42.4% compared to H1 FY20. We believe that these headwinds are transient and we are well placed to continue our growth trajectory in coming years. We are committed to our original guidance of 16 to 18% cost and currency revenue growth for current full financial year. Let me now move to our operating performance. In Q2, our gross margins continue to remain healthy at 63.9%, expanding by 100 basis points. EBITDA for the quarter has been at 11.4% compared to 16.5% last year. Excluding German new venture, it has been at 13.5%. Margins during the quarter were adversely impacted by one of external factors of higher shipping expenses linked to globally supply chain issues. We continue to judiciously invest in Germany. In addition, we stepped up our digital marketing investments. We increased our investments on new TV OTA channels and OTT platforms. These investments have already given us 5.3% increased new customers in Q2 compared to pandemic-induced high new customer count in Q2 FY21. When we adjust for our customers who bought essentials last year, the increase would be 33.9%. And compared to Q2 of FY20, new customer acquisition increase would be substantially higher at 61%. In our business model, new customers takes 6 to 18 months to fully mature through our remarketing funnels, which bodes well for coming period performance. All these initiatives will give us long-term benefits and boost to our revenues in the coming period. We believe that the margin pressure is transient, being linked to either strategic growth initiatives or near-term challenges in operating environment. I would like to reiterate that our business is driven by deep value proposition and with expanding range of products and deep penetration. We continue to gain market share across geographies. We also remain cash accretive in each evaluation period, financing all initiatives out of internal accruals. During the half year ending 30th September 2021, operating and free cash flows stands at rupees 53 crores and negative 27 crores respectively. During the period, we made investments in building our digital competency, automation, and business expansion. Cash was also impacted to some extent by global phenomenon of inflated sea freight and increased transit times. ROCE has been solid at over 50% on a trailing 12-month basis, while we continue to invest for our future growth. Our recent launch of operations in Germany has got off to an encouraging start with positive customer reviews for a range of products. We are available live to 21 million households out of total 38 million and on YouTube and digital platforms. We are confident that this market has a similar value proposition and customer profile to the US and UK. With an encouraging customer response, our front-ended investments should create good return on capital over time. We are on track to meet our target of profitability within 3 years of launch and are extremely excited with the progress of this initiative. Some other key developments over the quarter were launch of our new apparel brand, Tamsi, an affordable, inclusive, women-centric brand targeting customers of over 40 years of age. The tagline of the brand, designed for fit, love for value, gels very well with our purpose of delivering joy and for our existing demographic of 40-plus women. The brand is having a dedicated website with products also available on Shopify and TJC website. We also acquired worldwide online brand rights of Rachel Galley, a multiple award-winning UK-based contemporary design jewelry designer. These online D2C brands will further accelerate our digital revenues in coming years. We continue to take measures to improve efficiency. In this regard, we installed Geek Plus robots in our US and UK warehouses at an investment of about $5.2 million. These robots are extremely efficient and improve productivity by 3 times, leading to reduction in delivery time and cost savings. We expect a quick payback period of approximately 2 years of this investment. Our vertically integrated model and a supply chain network of spanning 30 countries is the backbone of our business and a key differentiator vis-a-vis our peers. Most importantly, our highly motivated team worldwide make it all come together to truly deliver joy to our customers and all our stakeholders. Now, reiterating our 4 R's framework comprising of reach, registration, retention, and repeat purchases, which forms the basis for driving operating performance. We maintain top quartile levels on each of these four parameters, translating into ongoing outperformance into home shopping space. The reach of our TV networks by the end of Q2 FY22 was 110 million TV homes. We reached TV homes through cables, satellite, telco networks, and over-the-air antenna-based TV platforms. Our products are also available on digital channels, including all proprietary websites, smartphone apps, OTT platforms, marketplaces, influencer marketing, and social direct response. New registrations during 12-month period continue to be strong and came in at 3 lakhs compared to 2.6 lakhs in the corresponding period of the previous 12 months. This reflects our ability to not only support changing customer preference, but also respond to them with agility. Customers bought an average of 30 pieces on TTM basis from us compared to 27 pieces in the corresponding period of the previous year. As the engagements with the new customer deepens, we expect to continue to drive bigger volumes. Finally, our retention rate stood at 44% on TTM basis compared to 50% for the same period last year. This is partly impacted by high new customer addition to Q2 FY2021 owing to essential items offered last year. Our retention rate of old customer base continues to remain strong. From the triple bottom line perspective, I am glad to share that we are now meeting 100% of our power requirements at all our manufacturing units in Jaipur from solar generation. It is also heartening to note that we have crossed a milestone of 58 million meals through our one-for-one meal program for school children with a run rate of 58,000 meals donated every school day. We continue to reward our shareholders, and keeping in mind our dividend policy, the board has declared an interim dividend of ₹1.5 per share. We look forward to maintaining fine balance between growth investments and quarterly payouts to generate sustainable value for our stakeholders. As I conclude, I would like to state that we have demonstrated resilience, agility, and strength in our performance for the last quarters and years. I would like to reiterate our positive outlook for the business. We are confident of our business model, value proposition, and our execution abilities. I reiterate our full-year guidance of 16 to 18% retail revenue growth in constant currency in geographies of US and UK for the current financial year. With that, I now hand over the call to Vineet to discuss financial performance for the period under review. Over to you, Vineet.
Thank you, Sunil. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Vaibhav Global's Q2 and H1 FY22 earnings call. I hope that you and your loved ones are all safe and keeping well. I will now take you through our financial performance for the quarter and half year ended 30th September 2021 in greater detail. As Sunil mentioned, Q2 saw change in consumer behavior with home shoppers shifting to in-person shopping, and we also saw increased holiday travel induced by lifting of lockdowns completely. Amidst this, we continue to expand digitally and geographically. Overall revenues stood at Rs. 635 crores, growing at 6% year-on-year, with retail revenues growing at 3.3% year-on-year. In local currency, ShopLC grew by 2.3% year-on-year, and ShopTJC reduced marginally by 1.7% year-on-year. However, in comparison to Q2, both ShopLC Q2 FY20, both ShopLC and ShopTJC grew substantially by 22.1% and 24.5% respectively. TV revenues have shown marginal improvement year on year at Rs. 389 crore, though a strong growth of 24.6% year-on-year over same quarter FY20. While digital revenues in Q2 FY22 increased by 8.6% year-on-year, over the same quarter in FY20, it grew by 52.9% year-on-year to ₹226 crore during this current quarter. EV contribution to our retail revenues is now at 64%, with the balance 36% accruing from the digital segment as the business continues to get greater traction there. As you know, TV includes customer accessing our products through our proprietary TV channels that reach their homes, both on conventional TV media as well as free-to-air channels, on OTA platforms. Digital includes online purchases on our proprietary websites, shopping apps, OTTs, and social e-commerce. With omni-channel customers, our core focus remains to encourage customers to transact on both TV and digital platforms, which gives them a unique shopping experience. Such omni-channel customers relatively fetch us significantly higher lifetime value than customers that either buy only on TV or only digitally. In our overall product mix, revenue contribution from non-jewelry product was at 30% in Q2, which has significantly increased from single digit levels few years back. This clearly demonstrates our ability to expand wallet share by entering adjacent categories over time. Non-jewelry categories now include fashion accessories, lifestyle products, apparels, and beauty products. This trend has also balanced our revenue streams. Our budget pay feature provides customer with the convenience of buying on EMIs. During the quarter, the products sold via budget pay contributed 38% of total retail revenues. This feature has added level of affordability, especially in high ticket size products. Gross margins in Q2 continue to remain strong and marginally improved to 63.9%. On an overall basis, EBITDA margin for Q2 is 11.4% versus 16.5% for the same period during the last year. EBITDA excluding the Germany investments in Q2 is 13.5%. For H1, EBITDA margin excluding Germany is 14.4% versus 15.3% in H1 of last year. Slight drop in Q2 EBITDA margin excluding Germany was partly impacted by short-term increase in sea freights owing to global supply chain constraints and our increased investment on new TV OTA channels as well as accelerated investment in digital marketing spends. We are confident that most of these are transient in nature and we will rebound to our growth trajectory in the ensuing quarters. Profit after tax came in at rupees 42 crores. Operating cash flow came in at rupees 53 crores and free cash flow was minus rupees 27 crores. The disruption in global supply chain resulted in higher inventory levels and consequently increased working capital investment. We expect this to revert back to normal levels in the coming quarters. Free cash flows also reflected planned higher capex on warehouse automation, digital capability building measures, and initial operating cost of Germany. We had front-loaded this capex in H1 of current year to get the full benefit in the upcoming season. On a TTM basis, ROCE and ROE continue to remain very healthy and were at 51% and 28% respectively. The stability in these ratios signify the strength of our business model. As Sunil mentioned, we continue with our policy of recommending dividend every quarter And in this quarter, the board has approved an interim dividend of rupees 1.50 per share for Q2 FY22. Towards the end, I would like to reiterate that the group has made a robust start to its financial year in Q1. Due to some short-term aberrations as discussed above, growth momentum has slightly slowed down in Q2. However, we continue to demonstrate resilience, agility and strength and are a firm believer in investing short-term headwinds to capture long-term opportunities. We are confident in the business prospects ahead of us and we are investing to capture growth and continuous healthy cash generation. We remain confident of our prospects and we deliver on our stated growth guidance of 16 to 18% for the current year. With this, I hand over it to the moderator. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Latika Jeta from Concept in Investville. Please go ahead.
Hello. So two questions from my side. The first question is, if you see the number of households, it is around 110 million households currently. But if I see in that, in US, it has reduced from 77.5 million to 63.5 million. Also, if I had to relate with the TV revenues, so TV revenues have grown nearly by 0.5% for the quarter, whereas the volumes have grown both on a quarterly basis and a half yearly basis. So I just wanted to ask that is this an indication that the industry is moving or say transitioning from teleshopping to say video social commerce or web commerce? And I would also like to hear Sunil's thought on whether what is your take on your target in maybe 5 years time for your TV versus web revenue. And I have a second question, which is, how are you looking at the B2C brand, which is Tanzi and Rachel Gary, which one I believe is organic and one is inorganic. I just wanted to pick your brains behind launching these as a separate brand rather than selling it how you sell all your different products. So why, what is the idea behind launching this as a brand, and going forward, can we expect more brands coming in?
Latika, this is Sunil. Thanks for your questions. I'll take that one. So the first one is about the households. So it is not the cord cutting that has led to the reduction in number of households. There was one operator, one platform with whom we exited because they wanted to increase the price and we didn't find it worthwhile. So we exited with them. And we have taken alternate OTA distribution to cover those households. So the OTA may be the same homes that we already have, and this is getting duplicate the broadcast in those markets, but at a much better penetration. So per household revenue will be much higher on them compared to some health cable or satellite homes. So these numbers that you see in the US is regular negotiation with the cable operators, not as a trend phenomenon. Your next point is about 5 years of TV versus e-com. So we have given this guidance earlier also. We look at 3 years. We expect our digital revenue to cross 50% in 3 year time horizon, which is currently about 35%. And the third point was about the D2C brands, Dempsey and Richard Gally. So these are something that we are experimenting with, going the D2C brand. And we feel that they have potential, but this is something we are experimenting and testing how they will fare. We don't have any guidance on them yet, but this is a testing for us. Lipika, did I answer your question or do something still not answered?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure.
A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Bharat Shah from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Vinitji, basically, the second quarter is witness a brunt of two main headwinds. One has been the German operation cost, which in any case was planned, and which is about 15 crore losses that have been incurred in the German operations. The second one has been the freight cost and the supply chain disruption that has occurred, which also happens to be about 15 crores. So these 30 crore additional cost clearly has impacted the numbers where we stand. Now, when we look at our operating profit trajectory, we've been steadily improving over a period of time as our scale is improving. And given the fact that of the total cost, about 40-45% is variable, that allows us an operating leverage as the scale gets higher. So if we disregard German operation loss for the current year, despite the impact of the supply chain disruption in the second quarter, for the year in entirety, are we likely to match up to the kind of operating profitability and the margins that we had last year? Or we would still fall below that in the despite catch-up in the next two quarters?
Thanks, Bharat Bhai, for that question. And you are right, the EBITDA margin are impacted by two things. One was investment in Germany, which is planned. So that is exactly in line with the guidance what we gave, a $3 to $5 million loss for the first year, break-even in the third year. So we are happy that it's proceeding as exactly as we envisaged it to be. So 2% impact close because of that. The other 2.3% impact was from the elevated sea freight levels. We have already started seeing it softening. We expect it to continue to go down and reach a stable level in the short term. Having said that, we have also launched a lot of cost initiatives to counter some of these increase, as well as the effort is also to pass on the increased cost to the customers and keep focus on the gross margins. So in nutshell, excluding the Germany losses, which will be there in this year, we expect the year to end at a flattish or slightly positive operating leverage only by the various cost initiatives offsetting the elevated sea freight level.
Compared to last year, because last year we had about 14.7% kind of operating margin. So despite the setback of the second quarter, barring German operation losses, the year should end up with similar or better kind of margin, right?
Yes, Bharat Bhai, that's what we expect to end with all the initiatives planned. And of course, we do expect this sea freight to stabilize, which we have started seeing some signs of softening.
So, and the second one, our longer range business plan has been kind of leveraging multiple distribution channels, expanding a range of offerings and not depending only on jewelry. And given the nature of our activity on an outsourcing basis and multiple geographies and supply chain arrangements, there is a significant component of the fixed cost. And therefore, operating leverage as we get a scale and we keep getting ahead is something which is integral. And therefore, earlier in various discussions, our belief is that over, let's say, next 3 to 5 years, steadily there should be uptick on the operating margin, purely because of the many cost initiatives as well as in terms of the operating leverage. So that journey stays, right?
Absolutely, Bharat Bhai. The business model is such that with increasing revenue, operating leverage flows into the bottom line. We have seen that in the past 5 years, and we expect the trend to continue in future as well. This is a year of investment into Germany and other growth initiatives.
Right. And last question that I need to check. While Sunilji did highlight about business model, execution, resilience, and agility, all the defining hallmarks of Vaibhav, they stay intact. But none the same, given a rather near term or a shorter term customer behavior in terms of homebound people, when they got a chance, they moved away from home, and it affected our second quarter growth rate in top line. But our core business model and all that we think about it, I suppose there is no any tweaking in the long term. What we visualize about our business, about on a long term basis, that healthy double digit growth rate of the top line, that vision is not altered by anything that we have witnessed in the short term.
I'll take that. Bharat Bhai, as I already stated in my opening remarks, I am more excited now than ever with our business model.
Sunilji, can you speak up a little bit? Your voice is not clear, Sunilji.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
It is still faint, but continue.
Let me go. Yeah, can you hear me now, Bharat Bhai?
Has it.
Yeah, Bharat Bhai, can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
So as I mentioned in my opening remarks, I'm more excited than ever with our business, where we are in the business. And the various growth initiatives that we have put in place are all our confidence in the model and our confidence in the business. And that is sustained long-term growth potential or trajectory that we've already seen in the last 5 years. Will continue for foreseeable future. And these initiatives will make sure that these continue the same way. So the top line growth as well as the leverage should come back, should be there. So the top line should continue and the leverage will come back after the German initiatives are matures. German initiatives and a digital initiative that will mature, the leverage will come back. And the leverage will be there within this financial, it will be flat or leverage for the full financial year for US and UK itself.
And Sunilji, just to check on this, now what makes you say that you are more excited than before? What is at margin, what is caught your attention that which makes you more excited than before?
So quite a number of things. One is the OTA. OTA is a antenna broadcast into homes, which people don't pay anything, and it's a digital broadcast. OTA homes are increasing every year 4%. There is a cable which people pay that is getting cut, and we found very good traction on OTA. So in H1, we've made investment in OTA, and we are seeing good traction on that home and that investment. Number two is OTT. OTT is like Amazon Prime or Roku or Hulu. So that investment we started making, and we are seeing a lot of customer traction in that. The lifetime value on OTT is even higher than TV. And third is digital. As we learn digital over the years, we are seeing traction of revenue growth and customer acquisition and being able to penetrate to the customer who would not normally buy on television. So as we are learning more about that, that excites us more. And the fourth is the geography. We went into Germany knowing that we were in Germany a long time ago in 2007. But going back in the last few weeks, few months, we found that customer behavior is very similar to US and UK. And we can scale there very rapidly. Our original position is 3 years profitability, but we may actually hit it even sooner. So we are seeing the traction there. So all these factors combined gives me tremendous excitement of where we are in the business.
I see. So you are saying German operation may turn out results what you envisaged earlier than what you thought when we planned Germany operation.
Yeah, that's a possibility. We are not giving guidance of earlier at this time, but that seems a possibility once we have seen the question there.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Sunilji, and all the very best.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Ashish Kanodia from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, in your opening remarks, you have highlighted that you have onboarded new channels. So can you just talk about that in which geographies we have onboarded these channels and are these channels 24/7?
So in Germany, you're talking about or the OTs?
Both, sir.
Yeah, in Germany, we have 20 hours live out of 24. In US and UK, we have 24 live in both geographies. And OTA is OTA or OTT is the same broadcast of the same signal. So in US and UK, OTA and OTTs, we broadcast in 24/7.
So my question was, in your PPT, we have talked about adding new TV channels. So my question was, in which market this new channels have been added?
I see. So they are mostly OTA channels. OTA is over the air antenna signal. And this is a digital signal. And that was spread all over US. So US is about 210 different markets. So they are called TV markets. Of those 210 markets, there are about 80 markets on OTA, full power OTA. So we still have about 130 markets to still go into in OTA full power. So they are spread all over the US.
Okay. And secondly, sir, you have talked about, how the customer acquisition has been if we adjust for the, the customer who basically came only for the essentials. Would it be possible to share the retention rate also? Because, if you look at the retention rate, it has come down to 46%. But of course, it has that element of, customers moving out who just came for the essential. So if we carve out those customers, what was the retention rate for the quarter?
Yeah, good question. I don't have that answer right now. It's a very technical, very micro detail. I'm sure Prashant should be able to give that to you later.
Sure. And, lastly, my understanding was that because, 70% of the revenue is still jewelry, and jewelry is not necessarily a voluminous product, so we are more dependent on air rather than sea. And that is why, even if the sea field has gone up, it should have not impacted materially. So just wanted to check, is that understanding correct, or we are actually far more dependent on, water-based rather than air-based?
Sorry, I couldn't understand your question. Can you repeat that again, please?
So my question was that, my understanding is because jewelry is non-voluminous, so we use air as a, air as a mode of shipment rather than sea for shipment. So I just wanted to check, is that correct or is it more dependent on sea?
Yeah, you're right. Most of the jewelry is shipped by air. But some fashion jewelry from China or, say, stainless steel or brass jewelry from India, that is sent by sea. But majority is sent by air. That is correct.
Sure. And just last question on the D2C brand. So I think you said that, you know, this both this D2C brand will be available from the, you know, from the TV channels as well as having their own website. So, you know, how is it different barring the fact that, you know, they will have their own website? So what's the strategy on both this brand and how is it different versus what we are already doing, you know, with our existing business?
Yeah, very good question. The reason I mentioned that these are tests for us is because we want to see how the customer behavior is on dedicated standalone sites that project authority rather than sites that have multiple product categories. So, for example, multiple product categories, then we are being seen as Amazon or Target or Walmart versus D2C dedicated site. So there is a test for us to see whether the customer traction on dedicated site is better for that product or on a multiple products. But we feel that initial response that we're getting, we see that there's a potential to scale up these dedicated sites for higher value for these two products. For example, Richard Berry, we've been selling for 8 years now. MC Apparel, we also sell on main sites. But we're seeing that they may have a higher traction from customers on digital space, and we may be able to target some customers that we may not attract their general website.
Sure. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much and all the best.
Sure, Ashish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nilesh Shah from Envision Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Sunil, my first question is for you. This quarter, our revenues from the lifestyle segment have fallen marginally as a percentage of the overall revenues, whereas our aspiration is to basically take it up to about 50% over the medium term. So anything which essentially didn't work for us this quarter? I mean, any reason why lifestyle as a segment was soft, especially in context of its share in the overall revenues? Or if at all, that's just a temporary aberration?
Sure. So last year, we sold a huge amount of essentials, the masks, sanitizer, the toilet rolls, the food items, and wellness items in the pandemic. And this year, that sales was not there. So there was a bit of a lower uptick. But to offset that, some of the sales came from handbags or apparel or people or travel things, people going out. So those sold well. So it is just a temporary aberration of last year's high base of essentials.
Okay, thank you. The next question is around, you know, our medium-term trajectory. And, you know, you just mentioned that we aspire to have our digital revenues cross 50%. Now, our realizations from the digital side, realizations per unit, are lower compared to the realization while we sell it on the TV. So, and there is a difference of about roughly more than even 10%. And as those revenues, as the share of revenues from digital increase, does that pose some kind of a headwind for us in terms of our growing our revenues in double digit? Because that puts additional pressure in terms of growing volumes correspondingly to offset the impact on realization. So just wanted your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so on the web side, the lower price point that you see is predominantly because of some clearance mechanism that we have. It's called rising auction, $1 auction on the site. So still that portion is relatively high right now. But as the sales on digital channels increase, that clearance mechanism becomes smaller percentage of total digital revenue.
Okay.
So the overall average price on digital would eventually converge to our TV average price point over the longer term.
Okay, that's helpful. And last one, this quarter our gross margins have inched up. Any specific reason? Generally, when there's been rising prices, rising input prices, what has really contributed to expansion of gross margins this quarter?
So partly we tried to offset a bit of the shipping cost that we were paying, and the shipping costs The shipping cost could be there. So we constantly look at trying to expand the margin to offset the shipping discounts that we give or the shipping costs that we incur. We're giving out more and more shipping, free shipping promotions in US and UK. For example, in UK, we have PUC Plus. But PUC Plus gives free shipping to the customers who subscribe to that monthly service. So to offset that, we try to increase the gross margins. And in US also, we're giving some free shipping for example, the $1 option, rising options. Anybody who signs up for auto pay gets free shipping. So to offset those promotions, we try to increase the margin. So we've been able to increase those margins slightly during the quarter. And in the coming quarters, our effort will be to increase it even further if we can. But there's not a guidance right now. Guidance is generally 60% plus. But that is our endeavor to increase to offset the other costs.
Okay. And our share of revenues from the budget pay mode has now inched up to 38%. I remember on one of the earlier calls, you said the intent is to not, not have the budget pay revenues cross 40% mark. So we seem to be approaching the 40% mark. Do we still kind of intend to kind of keep that as some kind of red line, or we would be flexible on that, or does that pose any kind of an additional headwind for us in terms of our future growth?
Yeah, so the 40% was a general guideline. It is not a red line for us. If the customer, it may go slightly higher too, or it may stay slightly lower, but we don't expect it to move substantially either way. The reason is that the model of our price point, keeping it around $28, $29 kind of price point, where we don't give budget pay under $20. So that price point, that kind of model leads to this kind of ratio. If the price point goes to, say, $30, it may slightly go 40, 41. But our endeavor is to stay about 50% of our competitors in average price point.
Right. Great. Thank you so much. That was very helpful. And best wishes for rest of the year.
Thanks, Nidish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Tejwani from Julius Baer. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So my first question is, you mentioned that home shoppers have preferred in-person shopping and, holiday travel. Don't you think this trend would continue over the shorter term?
Yeah, so we expect it to come back to the normal life in the very short term because people have been cooped up inside. So having cognizant of that is that we're giving this guidance of keeping to our target of our guidance of 16 to 18%. But in longer run, when people will settle down, we expect the similar kind of growth rate to come on. Medium term, we are doing 15 to 17% for US, UK. But in longer term, when we include Germany or other initiatives, it may even be higher than that.
Understood. My second question is, in your EBITDA margin walk, you mentioned accelerated investments in digital and broadcasting. So wanted to know if this velocity of these investments would remain the same over the next few quarters?
Yeah, so OTA point of view, let me give you a perspective of why there's higher expense where the number of homes were lower. So OTA homes is approximately 10 times more expensive than the normal, typical cable home. And the investment in airtime is mostly front-ended, where you invest right away, but the customer matures in 6 to 18 months' time. So it is more front-ended rather than back-ended. So OTA will continue to invest if you get the opportunity. In last quarter, in last 6 months, actually, we got good opportunities to get into two major OTA affiliates. We may not get those mature opportunity in coming quarters, but we'll take them when they come to us. And they're largely front-ended rather than back-ended. Now, the second part is digital. See, digital investment will continue over the time, but and the result of those investment is shorter term than OTA homes. So digital lifetime is shorter than the OTA lifetime and the return is also quicker. So digital level will be relatively elevated, but the return will also be just sooner on that one. So coming to overall some of the question, some of my comment is, it may not be as high in coming quarters as it has been in Q2. But
Understood,
it will be there.
Understood, sir. So could you just call out how many subscribers are there in OTA, just for us to understand how big this space is?
Sure. So there are two types of OTA. One is a low power OTA, one is a full power OTA. So there are about 20.6 million homes in US who are pure OTA. The homes that they consume TV only by antenna. There are many homes who have OTT, that means the connected TV, as well as they consume by OTA. There are many homes who have cable and also consume by OTA. But pure OTA is about 20.6 million homes. Of the 20.6 million homes, low power OTA that we've been having for a long time, we're already in 18.7 million homes. But the full power home, which is 10 times more expensive than low power or cable, we are only in about 7.8 million homes of the 20 million. And even these 7.8 million homes are relatively new for us. So we still have about 14 million homes approximately, 13 million homes. We still have 30 million more homes that we can potentially go in OTA space. And they cost 10 times more, but they're productive between 6 to 8 times more than cable.
Understood. 6 to 8 times more. Okay. Understood. That's it from my end. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chintan Sheth from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. On the revenue front, if you can talk about how things are shaping up now, as we are nearing to the festive New Year Eve over there. What kind of traction we are seeing currently? What are the trends currently compared to last year October rather than September? Because given the base is low, as you rightly pointed out in the opening remarks. And follow up on the guidance, if you can touch upon given the 16% constant currency growth guidance you're maintaining, the second half growth run rate required run rate looks 20% rate you have to grow to meet the 16% annual guidance. So what gives you confidence in the near term that we can grow 20% on a base of last year, which is already very high at 30%, 25 to 30% rate, So if you can explain that part. Yeah.
Sure. So the first question, October. So October is a bit better than September, July, August, and September. It is a bit better. Not where we need to reach right away. But last year in US, we had US elections. So there was some impact of US election. Well, there was a tailwind of COVID, but there was a headwind of election. So we are comping against the election. So we have some room against last year on November point of view. Now, we have looked at the numbers closely, and at this time, from the visibility that we have right now, we feel comfortably confident that we will be able to have H2 numbers to meet overall annual guidance of 16 to 18% constant currency growth.
And to meet that, are we changing our product mix in a sense that we are getting more trends which can help us to feed the market better than what we were able to do in the current quarter?
Yeah, so product mix is a constant thing on every day basis or every week basis. We look at what customer is pulling, and given our ability to source so quickly, so we have this process continuously going. And in fact, last 18 months or 20 months, this has been phenomenally done very well across the whole organization. So this is a constant phenomenon.
Sure. And the capex front, we have seen slightly elevated capex in the first half. So, what is the guidance for the full year?
Vineet?
Yeah. So, Chintan, we don't give a guidance for the full year, but one has to see the capex of H1 also, including two one-off thing. So one is Germany. So $2 million capex of Germany is also sitting in this H1 number. And the other $5.2 million of the warehouse robotics Geek Plus, which Sunil mentioned about, that is also sitting in this H1 capex. So both put together about $7.2 million. So more than half of the capex you see is this one-off, which will definitely not be there in H2 this year. And
sure,
both we had planned in that way to front-end it in H1 so that we get the benefit in H2.
Sure. That is all from mine. All the very best and happy Diwali and seasonal greetings to you, to the team. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Sridhar from Business. Please go ahead. Mr. Sridhar, your line is in talk mode. Kindly go ahead with your question, please. As there is no response from the current participant, we move to the next question from the line of Rahul Ramakrishnan, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Good evening, sir. In one of your earlier con calls, you had mentioned that one of the differentiating factors between Weber Global and the rest of your peers is average selling price, that you have basically like a value for money brand. So how do you see the ASP shaping up over the next few years? Because right now we are at somewhere around 30.
Yeah, so we expect the ASP to remain around these levels only. They may move slightly up or down, but between 20 to 30 is our expectation for coming years.
Okay, thank you, sir. So my second question would be, in the last quarterly call, you were pretty seemed excited about the fashion, the retail side of your business, which is relatively new. Could you throw some more color on that, sir?
Yeah, we continue to stay excited with that. We have, in this quarter, we also had investment into acquiring an existing building and existing factory for apparel. And we have now have approximately 300 people working for us in that building. And there are apparel is having great. Hello?
Yeah, sir, sorry, could you just repeat that number? You said 300. And I think last time was like 120, am I mistaken?
Yeah, I don't remember last time what number I gave, but right now it's approximately 300 people in our factory in Atharva. So, and the traction of both our TV channels is very positive for Atharva. So we stay, we remain very excited with this prospect.
That's great to hear. So my final question would be regarding the number of registrations for the new customer addition. Could you give me a breakup quarter on quarter, last quarter versus this quarter?
Yeah. So we had new registrations. We had 64,774 this quarter. And last year, same quarter was 56,734 registrations.
Thank you so much for that, sir. All the best to you and your team. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhilash, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Abhilash. Go
ahead. Yeah, yes, sir. So in many of the con calls, you have mentioned that the LTV value of a multi-channel customer is very high than an customer who buys individually through the web or the TV platform. So can you explain in detail why the multi-channel customer has such a high LTV?
Yeah, so you see the TV is a push medium where we tell customer what to buy and then customer likes it, buys it. The web is a pull medium. The customer needs, they go out, look for that and they buy. When we can combine push and pull both, we find that the lifetime value of the customer goes substantially higher compared to TV or web. So something to do with loyalty develops when both push and pull combines.
Okay. So, what is the percentage of our customers who are right now buying through the multi-channel medium? I remember in one of the con calls you had mentioned that number is somewhere at 11%. So, what is it currently?
I don't have that data. Give me a glass. But perhaps Prashant can give it to you later. So right now, yeah, I got this point. It's around 12%.
Above 5%?
No, 12%. So, sorry, I got two different data. One is getting 10 and other getting 12%. So 10% seems more data correct to me than the calculated number. Yeah. So again, you're right. So anywhere between 10 to 12% is the number.
So it's 25%?
No, 10 to 12. 10 to 12% of the customers are multi-channel customers.
Okay, 20, I wasn't able to get the number, 20.
So 10 to 12%.
Okay, 10 to 12%. Okay, okay. And then
yes.
what is the buying activity, or how many products do these multi-channel customers buy in comparison to the normal numbers that we report in the presentation? Because I remember in one of the con calls you had mentioned that number to be 100 or something above 100 is the buying activity that happens on multi-channel. So what is it currently?
Yeah, this, I don't have that number. Prashant, can you pull that? Yeah, it may take time. But maybe if there's another question, then I can share this number once when Prashant pulls it.
Right. So I have another question. It's generally the understanding that comes while analyzing the business is, you know, we are more of in-house manufacturing, develop our own brands and then sell it. But when I look at the trend of the purchases of stock in trade over the last 5 years, that is significantly increasing. So I just shared a number with you, sir. So for March 17, the numbers of purchases of stock in trade as a percentage of sales was somewhere at 16%. And now in FY22 first half, it has gone to 33%. Whereas, in FY21, it was 25%. So why is it that our, purchases of third-party products seems to be increasing?
Suril, I can take that.
Sure.
As the non-jewelry share is increasing, so we manufacture our own jewelry products, but besides apparel, the other non-jewelry products are outsourced. So that is what you might be seeing over the last 5 years. The non-jewelry share increasing is leading to this increase in purchase of stock in trade.
I think another factor is the B2B. As our B2B has reduced substantially, that stock in trade for B2B is 100%, it was self-manufacturing. Whereas in B2C, we also depend on third-party providers, especially on LSP product.
Okay, so as our non-jewelry share increases going forward, we will see this purchases of stock in trade also increasing, right? Because as we, as sir, you mentioned that we'd be going to 50% of the the lifestyle product. So going forward, these numbers should increase, right?
That is correct, unless we go into manufacturing like we have gone into apparel. So in that case, we may capture that value additionally.
Okay. Okay. Until, just one last question was understanding the employee cost. So when I look at the growth rates of sales versus the employee cost, I see that the employee cost grows in line with sales growth over the last 3, 5, 7, and 11 years. So just trying to understand that where are we deploying, where is the investment, and which domain more of these employees are. If you get some breakup of, of the total number of employees, how much are in the tech part, and, why is that the employee costs are growing in line with sales? Why can't we see some level of operating leverage when it comes to employee costs specifically?
So you already saw some leverage because from B2B, we went into B2C pretty much entire business. But still, it is in the growth of the business, growth of revenue. B2C requires more manpower than B2B, substantially more. Still, the growth is in the line of revenue growth. So that shows a leverage. Now, in long run,
the warehouse people, the customer service people, those grow with the need or with the growth of the business. The places that we don't grow is the sales people, because the sales staff stays the same. The other areas, manufacturing will grow same proportion, or the warehouse or customer service will grow the same proportion. So there will come a leverage over the longer term, but so far as we have transitioned from B2B to B2C, that has not shown the leverage as of now. Some investments were there, in, for example, in AI or in branding or LSP merchandising, which is front-loaded. Because LSP, you have to have all the merchandisers and designers in place. Those fears didn't come initially. But as that business scales up, there will be some leverage coming in from HR as well.
Okay. So, sir, if the understanding is correct, whether, you know, going forward as our investments in the tech part will be, you know, increasing. So is it correct to say that the employee cost will more or less will grow in the line of sales, because we'd be having investments in the tech, and then corresponding employees also needs to be higher. So will that be a correct understanding?
Yeah, the tech partly is outsourced, partly in-house developed. So if you bring that in-house, that portion will go up compared to the expense that we have. But overall, that should be accredited to the bottom line, because in-house costs are lower than outsourced. But from tech point of view, so automation of the warehouse that we recently did, that will lead to lower HR expense in the long run. Maybe in coming quarters only it will be lower. So I see some leverage coming from HR points, from HR perspective in coming quarters and years.
Okay, sir. So one last question, if you may allow, is that when I look at our TV channel expenses, we kind of divide it into four parts. Just looking at over the last 5 years, that our packaging and distribution cost within the mix has increased substantially, whereas our content and broadcasting cost has reduced from around 63% to 40%, whereas packaging has increased from 20 to 40%. So is it again to do because of the sales mix that we are going through to the non-jewelry segment, and that requires much more of the packaging and distribution cost? Can you explain that in detail, sir?
Yeah, good observation. LSP is a little heavier, and the packaging cost is higher on that, and the shipping cost is also higher. So that is one of the reasons. And since the shippers have increased prices over the last 5 years, so that is one of the reasons. And distribution or broadcasting costs have reduced, because we have been able to negotiate better with some of the vendors over the last 5 years.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Shah from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Given the fact that we operate in thousands and thousands of SKUs, and therefore agility, sporting changes, and good execution become very paramount. Also, given the fact that we are moving into more digital channels compared to TV channels over a period of time, a lot of this will entail technology to understand customer data analytics, data science, and a lot of trend spotting, so that the agility is not compromised, is a key part of the business model. Therefore, I would like to understand in some length what kind of technology initiatives internally and otherwise are being done in order to remain at the edge and ahead. And Sunilji, if you are answering this, I'll request if you can speak closer to the mouthpiece, because your voice is not clear at all to me throughout this conversation.
Oh, okay. I'll try to be more louder, but I'm usually not loud enough, but I'll try to be. So your point about technology investment is very relevant, because as the world is going rapidly towards AI, ML, analytics, machine learning. So these becomes paramount. We are making investments into these spaces, outside investments for our size of company. We recently hired, actually almost a year ago, we hired head of Nielsen's AI machine learning. And he is now part of VGL and he is building up a team. He's already built about 8 people, data scientist team around him and creating different business models for different parts of the business, manufacturing, order management, customer behavior, product affinity, all these areas, we are building those models and deploying across entire organization. From that investments point of view, we just transitioned to one of the best web platforms, Salesforce Commerce Cloud, for our US business. And that investment has been substantial for the company and has been in the making for the last 6 months and has transitioned smoothly. And also the automation of our warehouses in US and UK has been staying ahead of the technology curve. So we are ahead of our size of the company in terms of technology investments. And we'll not shy away from making those investments better.
And internally, how is the staffing in the technology and analytical function, how it is done? How much of our technology spend and understanding comes from our investment in people within the firm? And how much of it is spent to acquire insights from the outsourced technology? So if you can describe the staffing in that area in a little bit more detail, that will help.
Sure. So our head of IT is a veteran of 20 years of TV and e-com space. Very well knowledgeable and a highly intelligent person. And he joined us about almost 2 years ago. We're fortunate to have him join us and accelerate our digital investments and digital journey. Now, from the people point of view, we have almost 100 people in IT development with us, just a development portion in-house. We also outsource IT development to third parties within India, some in US, but mostly within India. Recently, we took up some subcontractors in Eastern Europe, Ukraine, and some other parts of the world where we found good developers. So we are looking at all areas in-house, outsource, in normal software development, AI, ML as well, in-house as well as outsource. But the best part is that we have top-of-the-line people leading those initiatives for us. And then they are going to wherever area they can find the best talent and best technology for us.
Sure. No, thank you.
Thank you.
Sure, brother.
The next question is from the line of Kapil Banga, from an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. I just wanted to get some more color on the revenue guidance part. One of the participants has already had a query around it. So given that there is a high base of FY21 and there was also contribution that was coming from some COVID-induced purchases, stay-at-home purchases, which will not be there this time around, and with the mobility continuing to increase, are you still confident of the 16 to 18% guidance? Or is there a case wherein you want to possibly give a more conservative expectation?
Yeah, so the visibility that we have, Kapil, right now is of 16 to 18% guidance. So that is the current visibility that we have. And I don't see a reason for us to change this guidance coming in coming months. But if circumstances change, we will be upfront and always share with investors, as we have been very proactive in all these years. So we'll be proactive in case anything comes up. But as of now, I don't have any visibility of any change of this guidance.
Okay, so as of now, you believe that Q2 was just a blip and H2 would be sort of 20%, around 20% growth, leading to this 16 to 18% overall growth for the revenue for the year.
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. Okay. What's the traction on the app download, if you could share incrementally, if you have that number?
Yeah, so let me see if I have that number. I don't have that number right now in front of me. And app right now is going through a revamp. Actually, iOS revamp just recently happened. Android is about to happen. So I don't have the data right now. We'll just share with you in due course.
Okay, sure. Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The next question is from the line of Sahil, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. One thing I've observed is that we have a reach of about 100 million households, but only around 5 lakh trailing 12-month customers. What I'm wondering is, why is the number of customers so low compared to the number of households that we have a reach into?
Yeah, so the number may sound low, but you have to look at the sequential number of the customers that you acquire. And it takes time for customers to see us and then become comfortable and to come to us. So it's a relative number from the reach versus the customers that we acquire.
So
you have to remember that all customers we reach may not necessarily watch TV. And all people who watch TV may not necessarily be inclined to buy on TV. So the percentage of that customer is relatively small. But what we have to look at is sequential numbers from what we did in earlier period versus what we are doing now.
Right. And like, towards that end, if you could share some data around the number of customers who actively watch your TV channels, I don't know if it's possible to get that data. But if you could, then you know, that would be very, very helpful in understanding what the true reach is. Is it the case that, like, are this just one of the hundreds of channels and the customer does not even know about us specifically? Is that the case or what?
Yeah, we don't have the data.
Yeah, no worries. The second question I have is, when we look at TGC Plus, the membership that we have launched for UK, if possible, could you share some metrics around how this has impacted the lifetime value or the retention rates for our UK customers?
Yeah, so I don't have a good data on that, and also it has not been one full year of that initiative. So at this time, the retention rate and the full lifetime value will not be fully visible to us. What we have seen is that the behavior of the customer, same customer who were buying from us before and now, so their purchase is higher. Since it is not full year right now, so I can't give exact data on that. But what I can say is the customer buying through TGC Plus in UK is approximately 55% of our volume now goes through TGC Plus. And 45% goes through the normal customers who are not TGC Plus members. So the uptake has been phenomenal, but the lifetime value data will take time to get.
No worries. Then I guess we would be very, like, I would be very happy if you could share it after some time, like when you think sufficient time has passed.
Yeah, it's a good question. We are tracking it closely, and we'll continue to monitor and share the data once we have that confidence in the confidence that will come with the period of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sahil.
The next question is from the line of Sridhar C. from Business. Please go ahead. Sridhar, your line is
in. Hello. Hello. Good evening, Sahil. So just one first request is,
instead of voice, is it possible for next call, maybe if you could arrange to video, it would be good to see you all, you guys. Okay. The second one is, when compared to the last 7 to 8 months, so around 40% of the share, 40% of the price has been reduced. So just wanted to know what is the management's view on this topic in order to help small-scale investors like me.
Yeah. So Shiva, thanks for your suggestion for video versus voice. We'll definitely look at it and consider that suggestion. So anything about the share price, the share price is depending on you, the investors. So I will put the question back to you of how you see it and how you would value the company in long term. I will always request you and all the investors to look at the company with the long term prospects of continued growth and market share gains. Not look at quarter to quarter or in the short term. We are confident of our business model. We are confident of the team. We feel that we are at the right time. We are at the right time, the right opportunity, and will create a phenomenal organization in the coming years.
Yes, sir. I stand with Vision Group for sure. And the last question is, so how do you foresee the new business like the new management like Nike and other companies that is expanding across regionally, like where you're representing? I can see the UK and Japan there for forecasted to invest there. So how do you look this business, whether it is competitive side?
Yeah, so Shiva, have not studied Nike so closely to give a comment. I think many of the people in the audience can give much better commentary on those businesses than I can. I can only say about our business that we feel very confident of our business position and our long-term continued growth momentum and market share gain. And I appreciate your support to the business and your engagement with that.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we take that as the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for their closing comments. Over to you.
I thank all the investors for your support and engagement with Vaibhav. If you have any other question, please feel free to reach out to Carl Kola of CDR or Prashant Saraswat at VGR, and we'll be happy to answer any of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Vaibhav Global, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.